services, Lavazzi at boom1.co.uk present the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast.
Hello and welcome to the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast number 208. I'm Adam, and I forgot what I was going to say about it now. I had a really good one. Oh, blast. Exterminate, whatever. It's Rhys Parton.
Oh, come on, that's more like...
Exterminate!
Mary Lang.
Excellent.
Thank you. Kirby Bartlett Sloan.
Thank you. Why is it always me who puts his foot in it?
Matthew Gressel.
Oh, I almost used that one.
Thank you. That's what I wanted to know.
Needed.
Robert Haynes.
A pity. He had a brilliant scientific mind. Yes.
I can't remember which one I was going to say. I had it in my mind, but because you lot put me off, I forgot. This week, listeners...
What you do is you make notes.
No, I do not. I haven't got enough room for notes here. I've got piles and piles of recording and electrical and audio equipment in front of me.
I send myself an email.
You send yourself an email.
Yes.
This one has lost it.
Yes.
Well, this week.
Wait, what's wrong with sending oneself an email?
Yeah. Oh, it sounds like the Lonely Hearts Club.
Email is a good way of finding stuff.
I've got a little memory thing which says 6 on it, implies I've got 6 messages, but I can't get to them. Oh, I don't know if Ben's going to be on today. I'll send Ben a message. Just talk amongst yourselves for a bit while I... Oh, by the way, did you listen to episode 207? No. Well, thanks a lot.
No.
Thanks a lot.
Yes. I've downloaded it. I'm waiting to find time to listen to it.
Yeah, it's downloaded. I've been busy.
We earned a new listener via me publicizing... What's the word?
Paul.
Paul, yeah.
Publicizing.
Paul would have listened to that one. publishing that episode, or the fact that episode had been released on the DWO WhoCast site. What's it?
And it
Robert,
sounds like your friend is
sending messages
with me.
God's sake.
I wouldn't have
point deducted for later on for Robert.
Right. Aww. It's got to be Robert liking things. Let's see.
Right, I'm trying to.
Nothing yet.
Well, and it sounds like your friend agrees with me on the Christmas episode.
My friend.
He didn't sound very impressed by it.
Paul Wilson, the father of the podcast.
Yes, yeah. When you told him that my reaction was kind of meh, he went on to talk about it as if he didn't care for it much either.
Yeah, well, there's no accounting for taste, is there? Anyway, sorry, I got slightly distracted there. And all the new listeners we've just got from the DWO WhoCast Facebook page have now all switched off. So I'll have to edit some of that bit out. Or will I?
Don't.
This week we're talking about Genesis of the Daleks. And I need to find the other. Here we are. Oh, and the dog's trying to get in. Bit chaotic today because we've got Isabella and Alicia home from school because it's the half-term holidays, and the dogs are in and out of both rooms. Ooh. And Deb's at home at the moment before she disappears at 10:30 to go to her next lady. So, bit of chaos. I'm expecting arguments, and I've got to remember to cook the dog's dinner. So yes,
and that's on the podcast too.
What's on the podcast?
Arguments.
What's Pocahontas got to do with things?
What are you talking about?
For Christ's sake, Pocahontas.
Pocahontas is my nickname for Maurizio Pochettino, who is the manager of Southampton Football Club. Right, anyway, so the story starts...
We're supposed to know that.
Well, it's not my fault, we asked the question. It was with a slightly misty quarry, and then a bit of a battle scene between some people with some sort of colourful...
Are you my mummy?
I wonder if Andy was able to go over there to Bletchley. I think it's Bletchley Quarry.
Oh my!
It's like a few miles from his house.
Meanwhile,
I saw the picture.
The only one who cares.
The first of a very large death count starts.
Wouldn't you
occurring.
Go to? Wouldn't you if you could get to a filming location? Wouldn't you go there?
No.
If they filmed in Australia, yeah, I probably would.
Several decades
Meanwhile,
old, and I don't think so.
The Doctor arrives and has a chat with a Time Lord wearing a very strange, what looks like a sort of pair of tights on the top of his head. I don't know what it is, really. It's a very strange hat.
He's supposed to look like the mysterious figure who is Death from
the Seventh Seal.
Seventh Seal.
Ingrid Bergman.
The Ingrid Bergman, the great Ingrid Bergman film.
Oh, okay. Yeah. But it does look a bit strange.
The film where the guy has a game it's chess, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a game of chess with this figure of Death. It's set in medieval times. It's a brilliant film if you've never seen it.
And it's been parodied so many times.
Yes.
Yeah. Including in Bill and Ted's it's Bill and Ted's second one, isn't it?
Yeah, The Bogus Adventure, I think.
Bogus Adventure, yeah.
Bill and Ted's second one.
Anyway, I just come up to the thing I was going to say was, I think he says, tell me more. That was going to be my quote. Anyway, because he says Daleks, and he says, tell me more.
That reminded me of a very Matt Smith kind of way of writing. It's like that reference back to that, because he says, no, I'm not interested. I won't do whatever you want me to do. It involves Daleks. Ooh, tell me more.
Yes.
And that reminded me very much of Matt Smith.
Yes. And then Sarah and Harry arrive. And
Harry is brilliant.
Yes.
Sorry, not you, the dog. He is brilliant. Yeah. He's a brilliant character. And then they find that they've been dropped in the middle of the war zone. And there's a brilliant scene.
Yeah.
Not after he sort of they examine the what was that funny noise? Examine the sort of dead body, and then the doctor realizes they're going through a minefield, and the scene where he actually steps on the mine is fantastic.
It's iconic. It's not just fantastic; it's iconic.
Is it?
Yes. I found it rather silly because how is propping up the mine with stones from underneath? How is that relevant at all?
There's a few bits
saving.
Like this there's in still that the, story, but it doesn't matter.
Yeah, actually, yeah, still the thing. Yeah, it's actually not as implausible as you think. There are real life occasions, particularly during World War II, where things along those lines were done. And also, I think the Korean War as well. There are stories as well where they would be walking through an area and would find a landmine, and you would sit there and you would prop the landmine up, or you would put the same amount of pressure on it so that the person can then walk away without the mine going off.
Well, I can understand putting pressure on it, but I don't understand about wedging underneath it with stones any effect.
The doctor was not stepping on the middle of it, and by not rocking it, it won't go off.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, okay. So enough of 20 megabyte mine science podcast, and back to the episode.
It's
Adam,
an educational podcast.
Adam. Yes. Adam. Yes.
Adam. The when they run across that dead body and
they run across it. Well, they sort of came up to it. Didn't run across it. They sort of stopped at it for a bit.
Yeah. And the doctor also stepped on it once, actually.
Also later on when
oscillator. They didn't have any oscillators in it either. It was just there was lots of other scientific equipment, but not oscillators. Oh, sorry, carry on. Yeah.
Many of the guns, when you see the guns that have the orange plastic on the end, those are reused
Galaxy 4.
Are they?
Oh, I have an echo.
Fantastic.
Another thing about that scene, I thought it was really clever to set it up that the war's been going on for so long, which explains why they've got such a mix of technology, because they're all using machine guns, whereas it's... seems to be set in the future, but it was a nice way to get around the fact that
it covers up reusing props.
Yeah.
Well, it does. And I thought that was really clever because I wondered why in the future when they're facing Daleks, they'd be using machine guns, but it explains why.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought that was really clever.
Yeah. Anyway, so.
Although why would they develop, bullets like that on that particular planet? Why not come up with some other sort of.
Because it's a story, Kirby.
Mm. Yeah. Oh.
Okay. Anyway, Harry sort of, as I say, he wedges a couple of stones underneath the mine, and the doctor is able to step away, and they find themselves in some sort of trench bunker with some more sort of dead bodies that appear to have died because they got gassed. And then some gas comes out, and some people come out with some machine guns.
Sorry about that.
And they think the doctor's dead. So, they think Sarah's dead. So they pull Harry and the doctor in.
They
I got confused by that scene at first. I thought they missed her, but why they would miss her wearing that big yellow jacket, I don't know why, but they thought she was dead. I had to go back and watch it.
Yeah, Liz Slayton actually points that out on the commentary, and they sit there and actually spend about a minute talking and chatting about why it was left there, and they're like, well, there's no, you don't see any female Khaleds running around, so it's just like, maybe they just don't value women and just leave her there.
Yep.
Very sexist.
Yep, and very
There is one female Thal.
Well. There's a female file. One. Yes, there is.
One.
Yeah, okay, moving on. Yeah, so I quite like that.
That wasn't Reese. It was me. By the way,
that was Kirby.
It's Betchworth Quarry.
Yeah, thank you, Kirby.
Kirby. Stop.
So I do like the attitude when the Doctor and Harry are in front of General, what's his name, and he's using his usual sort of slightly sarcastic tone and gets clobbered over the back of the head with a rifle butt.
Yes.
And then he's asked to empty his pockets, and a few interesting things come out of his pockets.
Yeah, he put the jelly babies on the table. They were very loud when he did that.
Yeah, but Magic just agreed with you there, Reese.
Okay. Thanks, Magic.
I've got a sonic screwdriver in here somewhere. I don't know where it's gone. Exactly the same. Oh, right, here it is. Here it does this. That's fourth Doctor sonic screwdriver. Anyway, so yeah, they quickly overcome the useless soldiers. That's Harry and and the Doctor.
No, yeah.
And Sarah wakes up and then sort of decides to go in the opposite direction to which she just came. Hello, Deb. How are they?
Hello.
They're not using the bandwidth up, are they?
They're just not good right now, so...
Okay. Can I have a crack off? Hurry up.
Okay. Now, the Adam?
Yes.
The scene where Niter is looking at the Doctor's stuff, the empty out of his pockets...
Shut up!
Niter's yes, using...
Oh, wait,
shut up, Kirby!
Niter is using the magnifying glass.
Yeah,
and you know that you've got that great
scene
of him of his eye through the magnifying glass. Well, the Doctor describes the etheric beam locator. It's also useful for detecting ion charged emissions. Well, that line was later reused exactly in Curse of Fatal Death.
Yep. What gets me about
it was great. Yes.
This is so off a rip off of the Nazis. Ooh. that these actors, you know, the one playing the General and the one playing Niter, both got parts as German officers in future productions
Thank
of
you.
Different programs. Like, obviously, the General one, he ended up playing the camp German in Allo, Allo. And is it Peter Miles played Niter?
Yes.
And I'm pretty sure he was in that one about that's set in the real, because Allo, Allo is a comedy rip-off of Secret Army, that's the one. I'm pretty sure he was in Secret Army.
Yeah, good show.
Yeah. Sorry, carry on. Did I interrupt someone then?
No.
Good, right.
No.
Okay. And I did find it a bit, awkward, but disturbing with their stupid sort of Nazi salutes they were doing all the time as well.
Yeah. As far as I know, they only did that in the first episode.
Okay.
Yeah. When they got to the middle of production, and I think they were whoever was head of series and serials at that point sent a memo down to the Doctor Who production office saying, "Can you tone down the Nazism a bit?" So you'll notice the Iron Cross that Niter is wearing disappears, but comes back later in episode 5, I think it is.
Oh, okay.
Or episode 4, where they had already shot, where they had filmed scenes on those same sets and reused. So it does pop back up. So
that's what she said. Anyway, Sarah stumbles across Davros's experiments as he first tests out the Daleks, therefore leading to the end of episode 1. And that was quite interesting, really, wasn't it? Because we actually get the first word a Dalek ever said, technically, not necessarily in the timeline of Doctor Who, but in the history of the Daleks. Anyway, Yeah, Sarah sort of...
I'm going to have to turn on my subtitles to figure out what that was so that I can answer the question.
Okay. God, so ridiculous.
You figured him out.
I'm just going to be quiet during the quiz.
You're going to win the quiz. No, wait.
We've got Matthew this week.
We have Matthew, so Matthew's going to win.
What we do, we'll do have a little sweepstakes. What we're going to do before the quiz, we'll have a little bet as each one of us will try and, well, not me, obviously, but you lot will try and guess who's going to win the quiz.
And then we'll have
an extra 2 points to see if that might make a difference.
Who's going to come second?
That's first done.
So anyway, the Doctor and Harry... they have to walk through some sort of machine that's a bit like an airport sort of X-ray thing, isn't it? And they find the time thing on the doctor's wrist. And he says, you can't have that. But yeah, they did have it. Sarah's just about to get killed by a load of masters. You know what I mean? I'm getting out there?
Is that from Deadly Assassin?
Yeah, a lot of little masters from Deadly Assassin. And gets rescued by one of the mutos. And then they get sort of kidnapped or arrested, I suppose, by some soldiers and get taken to...
There's a story Stephen Yardley tells. He played Severin. Severin.
Just wanted to finish my sentence.
The muto. Where he...
How many of them?
Sorry. Stephen Yardley went to the BBC casting office in costume, and they kicked him out because they thought he was a vagrant.
the head of the science group is holding the doctor's sonic screwdriver in his hands. I'm just looking at it. It does look very similar to my one here. Just my one's plastic and that one's clearly metal. And playing around with a few other of the bits and pieces.
My sonic screwdriver's upstairs. I'm down in the podcasting dungeon.
Okay, if you say so.
Oh, again.
You're Dalek. You're Davros.
Yeah, so...
Mine's in the other
dungeon.
Yeah, so Davros and then demonstrates the Dalek, or the Mark III travel machine, whatever it's called, to the scientists.
Dalek.
And, because one of the... Ronson, isn't it? He stops the Dalek from killing Doctor or Harry or both of them. And gets into trouble for doing that. Meanwhile, Sarah and the others that have been taken prisoner have to load what is technically radioactive, sort of, what are they called? Isotopes, isn't it? Into this rocket thing. And of course, as soon as they step out, the little dial, convenient dial, says toxic. This sort of really
toxic. Very, very suddenly.
So we know that they're...
Why even have that dial in there?
So as we could
see. Maybe it was toxic.
It's either toxic or not, but I suppose it's for our benefit, really.
It's for our benefit,
So obviously they've got to try and plan...
Oh, I just thought of something.
My goodness, that makes a change.
Ding!
This is an adventure without the TARDIS. How is the TARDIS translating?
Yeah, very good.
Oh, that's good.
They've got the time ring. It's Time Lord technology. There we go. Time ring is doing it. I said it three times, like you do, Kirby. The time ring is doing it.
Time ring.
Because obviously it's even translating the signs.
I was channeling the seventh Doctor there. You see that?
Maybe they speak English on there. Come on, Kirby.
They don't speak English, Robert. There's quite a lot of instances.
Maybe they do.
Daleks later go extermineering, remember?
Yeah, also, bear in mind that there's a bit in it where he says Khalid. And it's, that's an anagram of something else, isn't it? So he's obviously using the same anagrams in Skaro as English people do, if you know what I mean. British Isle of Wight people, specifically.
Uh-huh.
Talking of the Isle of Wight, changing the subject. I saw something about to do the Isle of Wight. I can't remember now. I was going to say there was something about the Isle of Wight that I thought was quite... Jeremy Irons. I'll tell you, that's a little task for you. Jeremy Irons. Google Jeremy Irons on Wikipedia and tell me where he was born.
Scar.
Pardon?
He's Scar from The Lion King.
Who?
Yep.
Right, Google Jeremy Irons.
Voice of Scar.
First one who gets the answer will get 2 points for the quiz. So Google Jeremy
Irons. What was the question?
Google Jeremy Irons. You can look on Wikipedia and tell me where Jeremy Irons, the international...
Cowes, Isle of Wight.
There you go, Robert. 2 points for Robert.
Cowes.
Was he born there?
Yes, he was.
Yeah.
Oh.
Anyway, back to the story. So Sarah and her friends climb up this tower. It's quite cleverly shot, actually, because obviously it's the same bit of tower over and over again, but from different angles. And obviously lots of people end up getting shot. Obviously, these people are slightly better shots than some of the people we have on Doctor Who, but they still managed to miss the main actors, which is quite quite handy, I suppose.
They went to the stereotypical bad shooting for TV school.
And of course, that's how the end... It's a freeze frame, one of the rare Doctor Who freeze frame endings, as she... So let's go and lands on one of the convenient
little
platforms.
And it felt like such a cheat when you got the recap and you found it she only fell a tiny bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Adam. Yes.
Adam. But the problem is that she falls clearly outside of the scaffolding.
I know.
Exactly. Yep.
And yet somehow she ends up inside.
Yeah, she bounces.
Inside on a platform.
Yeah, but she bounces off the rocket and then lands. She's sort of hanging over the edge a little bit, Mary. So she could have bounced off of it. And that's why she didn't hurt her head, because she sort of landed on the edge of it. Anyway, so they get to the rocket. Did someone say Adam? Yes. Adam, go on,
Adam,
yes.
Adam. A couple of notes on episode two.
Go on, then.
Yes, it does have that iconic freeze frame at the end, but at the beginning, we had no recap from the previous episode.
Yeah,
it just continued with the story. Also, you missed the whole business where I believe it's Ronson shows the doctor the room that has the Daleks.
Yes.
The Dalek incubator room, which is pretty... setting up some stuff there.
Thank you. Anyway, pardon me. Anyway, so they get to the rocket. Sarah's a bit...
Hey, I turned off my microphone when I burped a few minutes ago.
Well, it was spontaneous. I couldn't have time
Good
to.
Good boy.
Just not when he fired.
Spontaneous.
It was.
Eruption.
I was in mid-sentence. I couldn't help that. So Sarah and Sarah and whatever his name is, get to the top of the rocket, but Sarah. Just get caught and don't get shot, fortunately, because I don't want to shoot the main people. And that's it, they get rearrested. There's lots of being arrested and not being arrested. Poor old Harry gets his foot stuck in a polystyrene clam shell. But great acting. Great acting. Dr. Help.
There always seems to be, in these iconic stories, there's always the silliness. Yeah. There's the clam in this, and there's the giant rat in...
Yeah, I was going to say that.
Wing Chang.
Wing Chang. Yeah.
Yeah. The thing is, it didn't break his ankle or anything, which is quite handy again, because it would have been a bit difficult for Harry to get around.
The info text was very amusing during that scene, because it was doing this business about, here, Tom Baker demonstrates the great skill of breaking a polystyrene stalactite.
Yeah.
He had to go to school.
The skill was not breaking it when he stuck it in the clam, because the end bit would have broken off.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so, where do we get up to for putting me off? That's right, because the Doctor and Harry bend some rather rusty bars they didn't really need to go through. That was another quite funny thing, because they could easily have just gone round them. So the Doctor then tells some people about Davros's plans and... so they decide to put a stop to his experiments until they investigate. And Nida's not having any of this, is he? So Davros plays along with it for a little bit.
Nida.
It's quite interesting how the general goes from being a sort of a baddie to sort of a goodie fairly quickly.
Tim Brooke Taylor.
And what does stand out quite a lot is the amount of effort that Michael Wisher is putting into this performance, considering the restrictions he had in the costume and everything.
Yeah.
But in rehearsal,
I thought it was well acted, but I think Davros is a bit annoying in terms of the character.
In rehearsals, he even wore a paper bag over his head.
That's a bit dangerous. Don't do that at home, listeners.
Paper.
I'm
joking, for God's sake, you lot. Right, yes.
What?
So the Doctor and Harry end up trying to rescue Sarah. So they're now in the Thal Dome, up through the convenient trapdoor. And they do the Doctor and Sarah in Pyramids of Mars routine, where they walk up a corridor, do a reverse and hide around the corner. I do love it.
Yeah.
That sort of thing is good. And then they do a bit of earwig.
Has anyone ever considered, why are they using this rocket when the domes are like within a few minutes walk of each other?
Yeah, the logic of it doesn't stand up very much, especially if you consider they've been at war for 1,000 years.
Anyway,
I really believe that.
So Davros goes and tells the Thals how to break through the Khalid dome. He's given them some scientific information that they can add to their rocket, so it weakens the shell.
Have you noticed that inside the Thal dome, they've taken pieces of the TARDIS.
The little bits of the Master's TARDIS sort of all peppered around the walls. Yeah.
Well, those columns are also in the Doctor's TARDIS from that.
Yeah. Well, they do look a bit sort of like Roman columns in a way, a bit shinier.
Yes.
So the Doctor and Harry very, very amusingly overcome a couple of useless guards and rescue Sarah
It was amusing, but I really liked Harry in this story because he's like the action hero of the story, yeah. And he does it so well.
Yeah, he does.
Well, that's what he was originally supposed to be, is the action hero.
So they sort of escape, and the Doctor gets electrocuted.
He's brilliant at it.
Poor old Doctor, and that's, of course, the end of episode three, I think.
Three.
Though it wasn't so originally meant to be the ending of episode
three. Was it not?
Nope.
Ooh.
Go on then.
The ending of episode three is actually about, what, 5-6 minutes or so into episode four.
Correct.
Where Davros, which I'm sure you're getting to next, Adam, with the plot stuff, when it's been exploded, Ronson gets, the dome's destroyed, the city, you know, and Ronson's been exterminated, and Davros does that big speech. It's supposed to be the cliffhanger of part three, but they discovered it was overrunning significantly, so everything got moved around. And as a result, there's a knock-on effect with the cliffhangers of episodes four and five as well.
Yeah. There's a great scene, though, when the Doctor tries to stop them from pressing the button to fire the rocket, and he just says, I've sent Sarah and Harry into there. And,
Ooh,
I know.
Yeah.
But, the Daleks are starting to become their sort of more recognisable selves. And this is that's the episode we meet Bittern, is it? The woman Thal that the Doctor befriends?
Yes.
And I just noticed is that I've got the DVD playing in the background with the sound off. I just noticed when we first meet her, she's not wearing the uniform that she wears later on. And yet they pretty much just run out of the dome.
I didn't notice
quickly
that.
There when the
all I noticed what stood out for me is her hairstyle. I didn't really like her hairstyle very much.
No.
Well, and then when Sarah, if you notice, when Sarah joins the freedom fighters, whatever they want to call themselves, all the others are dressed, including Bittern, in this kind of featureless green unitard, but Sarah gets to wear this snappy little three-piece outfit, which includes the material of the pants.
Corduroy?
What camouflage? Is it when you're... Camouflage, thank you.
Oh, you're talking.
Yeah, yes. There's a reason for that. There's a scene in the show where they run across this locker, and the Doctor hands her the pants.
Yes, that was great. Pants. Yeah, I remember that.
And trousers, sorry.
Where they find the bombs.
And
bombs.
They had already recorded
explosives.
Excuse me. They'd already recorded Revenge of the Cybermen, and someone noticed that story starts with her. That story has her starting in that outfit. So they did this so that they would have her dressed properly.
Yeah, match up
that story started
when they arrive.
Yeah.
Okay. Which I had not known until I was researching this episode.
Okay. Well, I'm just interested they said that the dome was made of some sort of reinforced concrete. Yet when it starts collapsing, it looks like a bit of polythene with the air being let out of it.
Something to dilute it or something like that. I can't remember what the line was.
They had loaded artillery shells with the chemical that Niter and Davros had given them to weaken it. And you have to keep in mind concrete starts out, starts out as a liquid and eventually hardens into something solid. Okay. So it makes sense.
Okay. Welcome to the 20 megabyte architectural materials podcast.
Anyway, so the Doctor sort of makes his way back to the Khalid dome and gets rescued by... and he's very happy to see Harry and Sarah. Sarah gets a sort of hug, in which he squeaks when she gets it, which is quite funny. So then the plotting starts amongst the scientists. Nida's conveniently listening in. It's quite a good scene, actually, in which Nida sort of pretends he's in with them and arranges a meeting. He's a bit gullible, this other bloke. He arranges a meeting. and you know Davros, even at the time he knew Davros was going to turn up. Thank you. That's exactly what I wanted to hear.
Very well done.
Yeah. So the Doctor then gets arrested again and gets attached to a strange chair with a sort of, his hands are clamped in a sort of thing, and he's got a sort of thing around his chest. and Davros.
Lots of things.
Yes, things. Davros wants, well, I don't know what they're blooming called. Davros basically wants information from the future to know how to stop the Daleks from getting defeated.
They kept referring to that as a tape, but it looked like a wire recorder.
Thank you, Kirby. Bitten is her mission to blow up the sort of the bunker, and it is well underway. And then there's a brilliant scene where the Doctor tries to overcome Davros, and I can't really work out why anybody who requires a life support machine to keep them alive would have a button on the dashboard to switch it off.
I know, exactly.
It would turn it off.
and then every time we saw the close up of Davros. Every time we saw a close-up of Davros about to flick another switch, I kept thinking, uh-oh, what if he accidentally hits his life support switch?
Whoops. Yeah. Or if he gets exasperated one day and slams his hand.
What made me laugh was when the Doctor did press it and he did his little movements, like he was dying movements. It was really, really funny as well.
Yeah, I like that.
But unfortunately, that scene was cut short by Nida, who... clobber the Doctor over the head.
Now, this is probably something Adam won't know or care about, but Kirby might. Nida reminded me of Mr. Magnuson from His Last Vow. Have you seen that yet?
No.
No.
The Sherlock episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway.
He kind of reminded me of that. He had the same look and the same sort of character.
I couldn't relate to that one, unfortunately.
You haven't been enlightened in such a way.
I've got them recorded, but I haven't watched them.
So now that's another thing added to their mission. They've got to get the time ring back, and they've got to get these tapes.
And what's Sherlock?
Tape, Ben. God's sake. So, the scientists have now turned into sort of hardened military types. And are able to
veterans.
And then stupidly they still try and bargain with Davros. Haven't really worked out that he's a bit of a homicidal maniac.
Let's kill him. Yeah.
So
well, they don't know what we know, which is that Davros even went so far as to sacrifice his own people. He's so obsessed with the Daleks. Yeah. We know that, but they don't know that.
And they think it was just an accident that somehow the information.
Someone tripped with the detonator in hand, sort of thing.
Well, they think that you know. Davros makes the whole point of pointing out, saying Ronson's the spy, and that's the whole thing. And I think that one of the big themes of the story is that you have the good, honorable, decent people, that the people who are as good and honorable as decent as you can be in a world that's been at war for 1,000 years. Garmin, for example, and the whole trying to negotiate. Up against Davros and Nider, who are just frankly downright evil and manipulative. Mm. And that's one of the big themes of the story. So it's not that they're being, I think, naive, but it's the clash of two different mindsets and the idea of, good and evil and, which one's ultimately going to win in the end.
Yeah, fair enough.
Evil.
Then this all leads up to the iconic scene where the Doctor is now going to commit genocide against the Daleks, and he's setting up the bombs and explosives and stuff. And then,
well, what about the iconic scene where he's got a Dalek attached to his neck?
That's what I was just coming up to, because that's a cliffhanger for episode 5.
Yes. Even though it wasn't supposed to be.
So what was supposed to be then?
About 30 seconds down the road when he's holding the wires together and he says, do I have the right? That was supposed to be the cliffhanger.
I think the cliffhanger they had was probably better. Yes, Reese.
Yes.
Adam, can we just forget the quiz for this week and say Matthew won? Because he's just going to say this when we get to any question to correct you. So let's
just be interesting to see.
If we're going down the road, have we got a giant P attached to our... Never mind.
What are you talking about?
What?
The P's are for our product placement.
No, I'm talking about a giant. If we're going down a road,
Reese is now driving
with a giant letter P on his vehicle.
I'm a probationary driver, and I have to have a red P plate on my car. Okay. And that's a new concept to Kirby, and he's making jokes about it.
I wish we did that here.
Yes. But anyway, the Doctor doesn't put the wires together because some idiot comes along and tells him that Davros has decided to agree to their scheme. And of course, he just drops the wires on the floor, which of course is handy that he did drop the wires on the floor, because of course it means that he didn't have to put the wires together. The Daleks more or less did it
himself.
No, he disconnects. How come then? When the Dalek runs over the wires, it blows out. He goes back. Well, I haven't got to that bit yet. That's what I just said. It's for God's sake.
You're jumping ahead.
I was just saying it's convenient he left the wires on the floor because the Dalek runs over them. Magic!
He didn't leave them on the floor, though. He just did them later.
He wadded them up.
Well, how do they end up on the floor, then?
He drops them again.
Thank you. They end up on the floor later on.
Oh, God's sake.
It's not convenient, though. He pulls it out deliberately.
Magic!
Yes.
Enough of the 20 megabyte contradictory podcast, and let's get on with the blooming episode.
We're not being contradictory.
Not talking about you, Matthew. Anyway, so this comes up to the scene where Davros more or less massacres, because he gets the scientists in the room and says, which ones of you will join me? Then all the ones that won't join him get sort of done in by the Daleks. And then all the ones that do join him get done by the Daleks as well. It's interesting also to note that the sound effect for the Dalek gun is quite similar to the one they use now. It's getting towards the more recognisable Dalek gun sound.
And the way people die is pretty similar too. You notice how they always throw their hands up over their heads, you know.
This is also the first story where we have a visible beam coming out of the Dalek gun.
I forgot to mention the fact that they were just about to escape when the doctor. When the doctor realised that he dropped the time ring in a little bit of a scuffle, just to sort of prolong the story for a little bit longer. Yes, Robert.
Yeah.
Did anybody notice that a lot during this story, you don't hear the Daleks say exterminate, it's Davros saying exterminate?
Yes, indeed.
Yes.
That's right. That doesn't matter, though. and also, it doesn't matter.
But, you know, when the Dr. Harry and Sarah are trapped in that one room where the safe was, and the doctor tries to use his sonic screwdriver on the door, I was thinking, it's deadlocked.
Yeah.
No, it's made of wood.
Deadlines.
Anyway, go on then, Reese. I can't remember what I was going to say. Anyway, carry on.
Robert said that the Daleks don't say exterminate. It's mainly Davros. But I also noticed that he said, I am your true ruler. And then he just goes, I.
Like I said, the doctor goes back into the little incubation room where the lights are switched off this time and resets up the explosives.
Yes, you notice this time.
Shut up.
Yes.
And then he can't get away because there's a Dalek in the corridor. Again, prolonging things because Harry and Sarah have managed to get away and Bitten wants to set off the explosives, but they really are trying to give the doctor every last minute available. And just at the last moment, of course, he gets away just before obviously everybody else gets done in, including Davros, apparently. Davros. But obviously they completely didn't have it him properly in shot. Oh, I know, it's very shocking, Robert. And
it's shocking, isn't it, Robert?
Yes, and basically that's it. They grab on. So it's a very abrupt end, actually, because they just grab the hand ring. And there's a lovely little speech at the end by Tom Baker. And that is the genesis of the Daleks. Now then, I'm going to now say what I think of this. I find it drags quite a lot. I don't enjoy watching this story. I don't enjoy watching it at all. There are some good bits. There's some good iconic bits in it. But I find it quite depressing. I just find it too long. I don't enjoy it at all. I admire some of the performances in it.
That's what she said.
But as far as being the best Doctor Who story, I don't think it is, personally. Because I don't enjoy it as much as other stories. Simple as that. But it's certainly the best Dalek story that Terry Nation wrote. I'll give it that.
He wrote the same one all the time, didn't he?
No, I don't know about that. No. I think writing-wise, it's very, very good. Dialogue, plotting and everything like that. Obviously, they've had to sort of stretch it out to six episodes, so I think some of the things were probably just put in there to stretch it out to six episodes. But it's just too long and too drawn out. But, obviously, like Rhys said, Harry is such an amazingly good character. It's just a shame he wasn't in it for very long. Yeah, so that's my thoughts. And who's next on my screen? It's Matthew Kressel.
Well, first off, Adam, I'm surprised you and Tom from a certain other Doctor Who podcast don't get along because he's not a big fan of the story either. Infamously revealed.
Sort of. Never spoke to him before, but I would get on to him if I had a chance to meet him or anything.
You get on to him.
Oh, be quiet!
Get on to him. Ooh!
That's what yeah, go on, Matthew. Sorry.
Well, I'm going to almost completely disagree with everything you just said because this is my favorite Doctor Who story. Period. As I revealed some time ago. I think it's, you know, as well as being one of my favorites, I still think it's one of the best. And I think that it's everything I think that's really symbolizes what Doctor Who's about. It, you know, it's the science fiction. It's the morality of things. Wonderful performances in this as well. Michael Wisher's Davros, Peter Miles' Nitre. And as I talked about earlier, the thematic stuff in it as well. And, you know, dealing with, you know, it uses a lot of imagery in a science fiction setting. And I think that's what science fiction is often good at, which is taking things from the real world, concepts, events, ideas, etc., and putting them in a different concept and taking them to the nth degree. And this is what
my God,
this
it's
does.
Full of stars.
How did I know that was coming?
Sorry.
Bit late, Magic. Bit late.
One day I'm actually going to be able to say something without getting interrupted on this show.
I don't think that.
I think that goes for everybody, Matthew, actually. Is anybody ever going to be able to say anything on this show without being interrupted?
But I think it's brilliant. I think it's one of the high points of the classic series. And as I said, I just about completely, totally, and utterly disagree with everything you just said,
Thank
Adam.
Thank you very much.
And I completely agree
and
with
this
that.
This is Matthew Crash's last episode on the podcast.
Kirby, go on.
Well, Matthew just said it. This is brilliant. This is one of the absolute best stories ever. It's always been one of my favorites. I posted a picture on Facebook of my BBC long-playing record of the story, which I listened to over and over and over again. I wish that it was so many years ago. I wish I had listened to it more recently because my excuse this week is I only had a chance to watch this once through and couldn't watch any of the extras. But this is great. What more can I say? It's got so many iconic scenes.
Okay, on to Rose,
then. I reckon.
Great performances.
Considering that we talked about Revelation of the Daleks last time, and that was okay, and I quite enjoyed that. And I think if Revelation of the Daleks had been another sort of 45 minutes long, it would have detracted my enjoyment of the story, and I think that's what's happened with this one. It's too much padding in it. It's too depressing, too much padding. For me, that's why I don't like it. Sorry, Kirby.
This was the first Dalek story I ever saw. And
same here.
I was fascinated by Daleks. I had heard of them, and PBS was sitting on these episodes. It took it because of where I started.
Sitting on them.
How did they broadcast them?
they were showing things out of order. At the time I was watching. And so it took a while before I saw this one. But I was reading everything I could about Daleks. I wanted to see Daleks. And I got the Target novelization, read it countless times. It's just great. How can you not like this?
Okay. I don't hate it. It's okay. Now, it's just, for me, it's definitely not the best Doctor Who story.
I have a prediction.
Fair enough.
I have a prediction.
Yeah.
Mary's not going to like
it. Okay, well, I'm just going to say, another thing that really annoys me about this as a concept, I like the idea of them going back and doing The Birth of the Daleks, that's fine, but the consistency between that and the original Dalek story, where we have the Thals and the Dals, it does bother me, and it's written by Terry Nation. Terry Nation should have known that there was the Thals and the Dals. I just wish they'd actually gone back and had a look at Daleks.
Dals sounds so close to food, though.
Yeah, but no, just to sort of make it tie in more accurately Adam, with that the tales they were telling us in the Daleks story.
It made them run on static electricity.
Yeah. Well, Adam, keep in mind that from the second Dalek story, they rewrote the entire Dalek history from day one, basically.
Mm. Yeah.
Because you keep in mind, the first story, there's a handful of them in a city running on static electricity who can't get out of it. And then you turn around their next story, they barely use static electricity after that. They're a universe-conquering threat. I mean, it, frankly, you know, if you want another example of writers who don't care about their own continuity, look at the Sunmakers and look at Mysterious Planet, Trial of the Time Lord, episodes 1 through 4.
You set a really good point there, because that's another thing that annoys me about this. That, yeah, the Daleks were, they ran in the Skaro sort of city, wasn't it? The main city in Skaro on static electricity, yet these are new Daleks, the genesis of the Daleks, and there's no mention of static electricity. But
actually, Eddie Owen on the Facebook page was trying to come up with consistency between Doctor Who stories. And I posted a video of Sarah and Rose laughing because you can't have consistency.
Can I just say, before you say on, I just like to apologize to any possible new listeners we've just gained and lost within a minute of all the burping that goes on in this episode. Normally happen that much, honestly. Does it, everybody?
Race.
Yes, it does.
Yes, it does.
It doesn't happen. Not at all, Adam.
Right. And there are farts in many episodes.
Right, point deducted for Mary. Right, anyway. Who was talking? I do apologize. Go back onto subject. I just wanted to insert that apology. Carry on.
Can I just add one more point to that, which is to say I think you can reconcile the two of them by saying that the first Dalek story takes place at an undetermined point in the future. And it may well be that there's one group of Daleks who leave Skaro, and there's another who stay behind who end up trapped in the city, wrongly running on static electricity.
I think those sort of theories are only from people who love Genesis of the Daleks so much they want to try and find a way of making it work.
I'll buy that.
But no, it's fine. It's a science fiction TV series.
No, it's a sign.
And also,
you've
got to bear in mind, Mary, that at the time this went out in 1974, I think it was, which was obviously 12 years after the original Dalek story went out, most people would never have seen that original Dalek story, and that they wouldn't have even considered the fact that people would have been able to watch it. They might have been able to read the book. The novel, but
yeah, 11
unlikely,
and a half years.
Yeah, but no, most people won't
book,
have seen it.
The book was still available. The book had been reprinted in 73-74. So the book would have been widely available at this point. This was the very beginning of the Target novelization period.
But that was a bit altered slightly, though.
Yeah, the book was, the novelization of the first Dalek story was altered to Ian telling it from Ian's point of view, and they changed the whole beginning of it around because they didn't
do
an earthly child.
That novel.
Yeah, even though that book works rather well. But
I have commented recently, and you've all scoffed at me, that the sign of a true geeky Doctor Who fan is this effort to twist everything possible into some time frame to make it all work out.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Of course,
fair enough, Mary. But I'm just what I wanted to say a couple of things about it that annoy me, and that is a slight annoyance I have about this. It disappoints me a little bit. I'm not saying I hate it. I just, for me, it is not the best Doctor Who story ever. Like everybody, it wins polls of being the best Doctor Who story, but for me, I wouldn't have voted it as
that. That's because it is the best Doctor Who story.
Oh, everybody spoke over each other then, so I didn't quite get that, sorry.
What was that?
Go on, Reese. Reese, you just said that.
Well, I'm in the same situation with Blink. Right. People say that's an incredible episode, but it's okay.
Okay. So anyway, are we still on Matthew at the moment? Or Kirby, aren't we? Sorry.
I think we're
on Kirby, sorry.
You're done. Kirby. Get off Kirby. Right.
Matthew, do you want to say anything before I move on to the next person?
Well, just getting back to your point of continuity and just to round that off, I mean, you have to keep in mind that Doctor Who's production office until John Nathan Turner came in the end of 1979, early 1980, and he brought Ian Levine in as the unofficial official continuity supervisor. Mm. Didn't give two flips about continuity. They weren't concerned about it. I mean, you just have to look at the fact, as I said, that the Daleks' history gets completely rewritten in the space of one story. The contradictions of the way the Time Lords are presented, and in the War Games, the Time Lords are immortal, and then all of a sudden you've got regeneration limits and the Deadly Assassin. So it's not until I think that the show starts going downhill in the 80s that the continuity suddenly becomes so heavy. And I tend to agree with a rule that I think Paul Cornell gave, which is that if continuity gets in the way of telling a good story, dump the continuity. The story is more important. And I think that that's the case here.
Though. Anyway, thanks, Matthew. Moving.
Well, I do as well.
Oh, sorry.
I like continuity as well, but if there's a good reason to want to rewrite it. And I think that this is a prime example of that. Mm. Especially if events are related in a third-hand account that's what happened.
Okay, that's another, you couldn't get around it that way. What you can't get around is the fact that the reason why the Daleks were defeated in that original story is because they could turn the static electricity off. Yeah, there was no mention of static electricity in this. Yes, you can get around the warping of the history through countless eons of generations telling the story, like indeed in Roots, that fantastic bit at the end of Roots Next Generation where Alex Haley meets his family in Africa, and he's got a soothsayer that can relay the whole history of the Kinte tribe. Right the way back to when Kunta Kinte was taken, and it's that sort of thing. They were able to accurately do that, but most.
Welcome to the 20 megabyte Roots podcast.
But obviously, normally in history, it's like the Bible itself. The Bible is an account of those things written by various different people and then translated in various different languages and interpreted in different ways as well. It's that sort of thing. It's okay. I can understand that, but sir, the aspect of the key thing for me is the fact that Daleks that we first meet in 1963 were powered by static electricity, but they got over that subsequently, and I feel that all the other Daleks after that, the ones that got out of Skaro, because they found a way of getting by the problem with the static electricity. But if there's been a mention of it in Genesis of the Daleks, just a mention of it. The Davros.
Well, Terry Nation.
Yeah, go on.
As much as Terry Nation was writing, not just for Doctor Who, but for every other series he was working on, and he was beginning to pitch what would become Blake 7 around the time this was being written, he probably didn't remember the Daleks ran on static electricity to begin with.
Yeah,
so
that's another good point.
I'll forgive him for that.
For me, that's a shame. Anyway, moving on. Rhys.
Unforgivable.
Okay, where do I start after that? I'm not going to go as far as Kirby or Matthew and say that this is the best Doctor Who story ever, but I will say that
that's
I've heard
you're
a
young.
Lot.
You don't. You have
no. I will
kids
say that
these
I have
days,
heard,
no
heard a lot about this. Shut up! Can we kick Matthew off? He keeps picking up on me about that, and I hate that. Like with Talent of Wang Chiang's, I heard a lot about this one, and I was going in here thinking, will it live up to the hype? And I think it did. It is a very good story. It is very well acted. I love, love, love Harry. He is a fantastic character. And Tom Baker is wonderful as always. But I do have to agree with Adam. It is very depressing and very grim. And that was something that I don't know if I was expecting it from.
Grim Reaper was at the beginning of it.
No, it was a grim tale. Not a fairy tale, but it was a very dark story, and the word dark keeps getting used, so I was trying to find something else to describe it, but depressing is quite good.
That was the lighting guy.
Shut up. It was a very, very gloomy story, and I didn't gel well with that one, whereas Talents of Wang Chiang, I agree, is a very good story, which I'd heard a lot about before, and I agree, I like it because it's fun, and Jago and Lightfoot are great characters, whereas in this, the characters were great, but they were great because, well, Nida is very much a comment on Germany and Nazism and all that. So
yeah.
I don't know. I like it. It's really well made. It's really well acted. The performances, I think, are flawless. but I wasn't expecting it to be so dark yet so loved, because what I love about Doctor Who, and especially the Tom Baker Doctor Who that I've seen, there's always a bit of fun in it, and it seemed a bit too dark for me, but it was still very good. And like I said, I really like Harry, and I can see where they were trying to get the Ponds and the 11th Doctor in season 6, because it felt like you had the same mix. You've got a quirky version.
Shut up.
No, it's a season. You've got a quirky version of the Doctor in Matt Smith and Tom Baker. You've got a fantastic male companion in both Harry and Rory. And then you've got the, although I think that Sarah was much better in this than Amy was in any of the episodes from season 6. she came up with a few more planned seasons, more plans than Amy would have done. But I think they were trying to get the same mix of characters there.
Season 6 was in 1968.
Be quiet.
Yes, of the classic series it was. Of New Who, it was in 2012, whatever year it was. But I think, yeah, I really like it. It's very good, but I kind
season
of...
Season 6 included the croutons.
Kirby!
Yes, from the classic series it did. New series, though, it included the silence for the first
never
time.
Never mind. Moving on.
Where was I? Yeah, I agree with that, that it was too depressing and a bit too, I'm going to say dark when Robert will make a comment about lighting again, but it was dark. But I will also agree with Kirby and Matthew, it is a very, very good story and very well acted.
Thank you, Rhys. Say the best to your last. Robert.
What about Mary?
Well, they say the Mary best till last. That's why I'm having you next, Robert.
No.
The best. Best. I like that.
I'm sure you do.
I have to say, I quite agree with what all of yous have said so far, because it is a very dark, all of yous. to quote a boxer who was famous here, what was his name?
Never mind.
The correct terminology. The correct terminology is y'all.
It's y'all.
All right.
Y'all.
Never mind. Get on with it.
It is a very, got, you know, the echoes of World War II, you know, a lot of the imagery that we see, like the bunkers and the gas masks, et cetera. And, you know, the Nazi symbolism. But I have to say, well cast, and Michael Wisher, I just wish.
You'd wish
have
Michael Wisher.
Many Doctor Who.
Wish, yes.
Go on, sorry. Sorry,
Michael Wisher for Michael Wisher.
Sorry. I just hope that.
What?
You know, we have Doctor Who.
No, I'm recording, for Christ's sake. No, there's no bacon.
Get back
shut
to
up.
A minute, Robert.
No.
Watch out, she'll come over and.
There's pizza.
Her computer gets the wall.
Oh, for a pizza.
It's Alicia, okay. Pizza.
Yeah, carry on, sorry.
So, yeah, if we only had Doctor Who actors who would take their role so seriously as Michael Wisher did with his Davros, as Kirby had mentioned, you know, going around with a paper bag on his head and
I'm
not sure whether he had a wheelchair that he used when he was, you know, acting out the role as well. yeah, he just went to the nth degree to find the character, and you know, this is surely the definitive Davros. And,
yeah, of course, I did slightly.
It's just a shame that
I
we
did
only
slightly got gloss over that great scene really when the Doctor asks him about if he had a virus. You know, would he use that virus and stuff?
Yes,
fantastic scene that. Yeah,
I would.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's just a shame that, you know, we only got to see him once in the role, and I don't think we ever saw the Davros mask as good as we did in this story as well.
Yeah, they kept trying to reuse it.
Well, they only reused in Destiny of the Daleks, and you can see that it just didn't fit the actor David Goodison very well.
Yeah.
but, yeah, I love, you know, just the portrayal of the Daleks. It got them into a really serious sort of look to them, even, you know, with the way that they handled the, you know, the fitting of the gun. And, you know, the Doctor using the gun in the office to destroy those tapes, just made.
Cute Kirby saying tape.
They did with only having three mobile Daleks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think there were five dummy ones.
Yeah, we did see when they surrounded those scientists, they sort of had a lot more. But here, they just, I love the way it was shot. And as I mentioned before, the lighting, just fantastic lighting that the, you know, just lent to the atmosphere. But yeah, it does come across as a bit too gloomy in the end. It just, you know, even with the Dalek sealed away at the end, it just doesn't seem to be like, oh, yahoo, we've won kind of thing. It just seems like, oh, there's no real future anyway. But, yeah, it's an okay story. And just, you know, would love to see more performance from Michael Wisher as Davros. It's just such a shame. Yeah. And he smokes like a bloody chimney.
Yes.
Yeah, the interviews that they show of him on the extras, he's just constantly smoking.
That's probably why he's not with us anymore. Okay, thank you, Robert. Yeah. Here we come. It's the best till last. It's Mary.
Everyone gets
I do like that
bunker.
Introduction. I don't know if I would call this my favorite episode because I haven't seen all the classic episodes yet. But I have to rank it pretty highly. I think
Yay! Yes, even for six episodes,
I was engaged, fully engaged with every episode. But yeah, I sort of agree with Adam about some of it's drawn out. For me, the most tedious part of all six episodes is the climbing of the scaffolding. Which seemed to go on forever, you know, and then the capture and the release and that guard dangling Sarah, you know,
that was a great
no
scene.
Reason
I
other
was,
than
I thought that was a really good scene.
It was a great scene, but it seemed purposeless. Yeah. It just seemed like
I was
you
just
know,
showing how
build
cruel
things
they
out
are.
And make. Yeah. So, but for me, that's about the only part that really dragged out was all the scaffold climbing. And I think that what helps this be such an excellent story is, as everybody has been saying, is the character development. There are people that you can't make up your mind about, but then they reveal themselves. Davros, as Robert was saying, is so well realized. And I think that his speech about holding that little capsule, even while, you know, holding his hands in such a way as if he were holding the capsule. And the thrill that gives him is such a wonderful revelation of what Davros is really all about.
We did that last week.
What did we do last week?
You said revelation.
Oh, I see. And I have to say that, you know, I'm not a big Baker fan, but in this episode, I really am because he's a true doctor in this episode. He's resourceful and adventurous. And there's humorous lines, you know, he says things like, you know, can you help me? I'm a spy, that kind of stuff. But he hasn't gotten to that evil grin, you know, manic look and starry eyes and all that goofy stuff that he eventually got into that made me not like him very much. And even Sarah, who's not my favorite companion, is really, really good in this because she's a little muted. She's not constantly mocking the doctor and doing things that make me, you know, not like her very much. And I want to say that the music was very well placed and very sparingly used. You realize there wasn't music for very much of this. Yeah. Mm. And I'm not put off by it being, as you all are saying, dark. Because to me, this was more of an adventure. And because we're going into the past and we know that the Daleks are not defeated, it's kind of expected that, no, they were not defeated, but they were set back because the doctor threw, you know, the Dalek running over the wires did destroy that room that had the more genetically advanced, brains growing. So the Daleks are kind of stuck in the form that they are at the present, and they've pretty much continued that way ever since. And by the destruction of the recording of the Doctor's history of the Daleks or future of the Daleks, that, you know, then they don't know about things that they can make themselves impervious to. So, yes, I think even to this day, we're seeing Daleks that are still pretty much stuck in the mold of where they were left at the end of this story.
Yeah.
So I really, really liked it. didn't find it overly depressing just because we know what the outcome is going to be. Liked it a lot. Don't know if it's my favorite, but I was happy watching every episode.
Can I counter one of those comments? I didn't find it depressing because I thought it was a bad ending or something. I just thought it was depressing because it was so well done, the analogy to Nazis and the Second World War and all that. It's a very bad period in human history, and this is such a good reference to it, I suppose, that I
didn't
expect something so grim.
Well. Yeah.
It works. It is good, but I wasn't expecting something like that to be so well loved from an era of Doctor Who that I see a big, wide-eyed, smiling man from, and I wasn't expecting that, but that's what I was referring to when I said it was dark.
Yeah.
But
I think it's loved because it's so well done, not because it's a happy episode.
Well, I think, as Mary was saying, this is before it became the Tom Baker show. It became the guy with the curly hair and the manic smile who was out for the jokes.
That's what I love. That's why I love him.
which is why I don't love him.
really there's three Tom Bakers. There's the Tom Baker of the Hinchcliffe Holmes era, which we see here sort of in full force. There's touches of humor, but it's really him being an actor. And then you get, the second Tom Baker of the Graham Williams era, he's out for the laugh. It becomes the Tom Baker show. And if you ever want an example of Tom Baker's humor coming in and depth charging a scene, watch the cliffhanger of Warns of Nimon Part 2, where Lyle Ward and those kids are Lyle Ward and those kids are acting their socks off, trying to make the Nimon scary as possible. And then when the cliffhanger gets resolved in Part 3, Tom Baker walks in and goes, "Oh, would you like a jelly baby?" And it's absolutely the wrong way to play it. Yeah. And,
no spoilers,
well,
Mary.
Even in the companion, I haven't seen that yet. Sarah being muted and not prancing around in silly outfits and mocking the doctor, So in this episode, I really liked her too.
Mm. Thank you.
A note about the lack of music. I had noticed that as well. And that I agree. The music is well done, but there were parts during the silent sections where there's no music where you could clearly hear Michael Wisher pushing himself around in his
Anyway, I'll
and
go on.
The music they chose was really good because there was a great piece when the Daleks were rolling down the corridors. I was going to say strolling down, but that's not right for a Dalek. But they're rolling down the corridors, and there's this really eerie music. It's not quite that heartbeat kind of sound we heard in other stories, but it's certainly very
there
eerie.
There was no Dalek. They didn't have the Dalek control room. That's why you didn't get that.
Well, they had that in which one was it? The
Revelation Eccleston, last week, yes.
Yeah. Oh. They had it in the Eccleston one at the end of his weeks. And it wasn't in a control room. It was a remix of it in...
Yeah, for some reason, they started using it all the time.
Mm. Okay. Anyway, moving on. Thanks, everyone. Well, that was Genesis of the Daleks. Now it's time to be quiet. It's now time for some news. Philip Hinchcliffe presents... and it's some new stories on Big Finish.
I'm going to be getting that.
And starring Tom Baker and Louise Jameson. And she's a friend of the show. And it's called Ghosts of... I can't read that. It's so blimmable. Ghosts of... Growlstead. Is it? Ghosts of Growlstead? Which is set in Victorian London in the 1860s sort of time. And, of course, there's another one called The Devil's Armada coming out very soon. So, yes, if I could afford Big Finish stuff, of course,
September.
I'd be buying that straight away. Probably not listen to it straight away, but certainly buy it.
I'll be getting...
The Doctor Who Adventures Monsters poll, about 3,000 readers voted in the Daleks won the massive 55% of the results. The full results were as follows. In fifth place, The Silence. In fourth place, The Sontarans. In third place, The Weeping Angels. In second place, The Cybermen. And surprise, surprise, as we just said, the Daleks in first place with 55%. And of course, there's a first proper look at Peter Capaldi in his new costume in Doctor Who Adventures. Says Doctor Who Magazine and Doctor Who Adventures have both seen huge rises in circulation over the past 6 months, with DWM recording its best ever figure and DWA reversing a slump in readership, which is good news. Cinema outing for Enemy of the World and Web of Fear. The BBC Worldwide have announced a cinematic outing for the two recently recovered stories, The Enemy of the World and Web of Fear.
Or showing it as a movie.
I don't think I'd like it in that format.
Cinematic, yeah.
But it says the stories will be shown together at the Prince Charles Cinema in London on the 22nd of February at 11:15 a.m. and will also include a 45-minute Q&A. Am I? No, I'm not. Q&A session chaired by patron of the show, Toby Haydo. Right. It's a film starring the very attractive, and you may agree with me on the, or not, reason this one, the very attractive Karen Gillan. It's called Not Another Happy Ending. It's now out on DVD on the 10th of February. That must mean it's out now, surely. And there's a clip. If you go to DoctorWhoNews.net, it's probably a little trailer of it. There's some lovely pictures of Peter Capaldi in, I think it's Karen called The Fifth Estate. Which is a film in which he appears with Benedict Cumberbatch. Don't know if you've heard of him. He played a character called Sherlock.
Yes.
Yes.
He's also
Never heard about that.
I didn't get any of that. Sorry.
I'm surprised you know about that. Yeah.
The rare showing of Pertwee program at archive event, a 1977 program featuring John Pertwee and his son Sean, is to be shown as part of an event paying tribute to the ITV channel Thames. The Salute Thames will feature a number of programs made by the company, including the edition of the quiz Who's Baby? Oh, brilliant. Format of the show. I remember seeing that, actually. Baby. Basically, they have a celebrity on and they show... Well, they have a picture and they have to guess who the father or mother of that baby is. And then we've got Adventures in Space and Time soundtrack previews. So that'll be something... I know it's not that shocking, honestly, Robert. That's something interesting to Reese. He does like his soundtrack stuff.
That'd be nice.
And, of course, it's happy birthday to Christopher Eccleston on the 16th of February. He was 50, which is quite sad in some way. He was 50 just after Doctor Who was 50, yet he couldn't be bothered to actually have anything to do with it.
He had two
50s. And that sort of concludes the news. I'd like to welcome some newcomers to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast Facebook group. So therefore, I'm going to do that right now. Well, not quite right now. I've got to click on a few little links first before I get to the information I require. But yeah, here we go. Right. I'm trying to remember who the last one was. Anybody remember?
I wasn't here last week.
Thanks for that. Okay, so I think the last one was...
Excuses.
I think the last one was Abby Payne. So, welcome to Vanessa...
Thanks.
Be quiet! Welcome to Vanessa Osborne, Simon Brett, Jason Leahy, whatever that is, and our newcomer from the DWO WhoCast sort of page is Billy Kirkbright, who's already sent me some audio, actually.
Actually, I think
you think
you need to go back a little bit further because one of the people that was added, I don't think we discussed this last week, was I was in the drugstore, the
Parks, right, Robert, ever. Head on. Excuse
me. Oh, right, yeah.
Use medical marijuana.
No, I was picking up a prescription for one of my daughters.
All right, never mind.
And I got a text, and my phone's text message sound is a TARDIS.
Yes.
And the person in front of me turned around and said, "Oh, that's my text message sound too." Yeah. And discovered that I ran into another Doctor Who fan.
All right, after you
right
ran into
there.
Them.
That's Desiree Catron.
Okay, well, you've just said it.
Who? And she. It was a lot of fun.
Cool.
Yeah.
Wasn't it Abby Hain?
Abby Hain. I said Abby Hain. Yes, we had Chantel Connolly last.
Wasn't that Abby Hain?
Abby.
Said on Facebook.
Was it Abby?
Yeah, it was Abby. I'm sorry.
Oh dear, Abby. He forgot you already.
No! I'm sorry. I got you wrong.
No! Right then. Which rather segues into feedback, because like I said, I did get this message from Billy Kirkbright. And let's see if you can hear this.
How you doing there, Adam? It's a great episode of your podcast when Paul and Amy was on there. I've got to listen to a few more, and I've subscribed, so I want to get the chance. It's usually when I'm driving, actually. When I'm driving on long trips, I listen to podcasts. So next time I do that, I'll have a listen. Anyway, mate, take care. I'll speak to you soon. Bye.
That's Billy Kirkbright. So let's get on to the rest of the feedback. By the way, if you want to send in feedback to the show, it's 20mb.feedback@gmail.com. And please join the 20MB Doctor Who podcast Facebook group. A. Do you agree with me on that one?
Oh.
My goodness, we agree on something.
Yes.
Right.
Never.
Yes. Okay, where should we go first? Is this from Andy Algor? Hope we can hear this because my speaker's not very loud. Andy and Dawn Nunny.
Good afternoon, 20MB. It's Andy Nunny here. It's called
Can We Hear It?
On Sunday, 16th of February.
Yes. Yep. Here. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Wine. I won't bore you with one because it's one happy forward to barefoot to Ian Blanc, so I won't go into that until I do much detail. Genesis of the Daleks. Yes, much better than that awful one I saw last week. Though it was interesting, the difference of opinion. There was only Mary and I really were in agreement. Everyone else thought it was really good. But that's fandom for you. You know, you've got to have different opinions. Not having to appeal to everybody. But I think Genesis of the Dalek is an undisputed classic. It really does go right back to the very root of the Daleks. You can see how they came about. I think it's a fascinating story, understanding what the intention of the Daleks was. You know, this is a peaceful travel machine because of what the Daleks were going to turn into, and how it got corrupted by the megalomaniac Davros, who obviously was an inventor, but how it, instead of being a force for good, became the force for evil that it turned out to be. Now, a lot of people have used the allegory of the Nazis. Now, when this was made in 1975, people of my age, Adam's age, for that would have been living memory. You know, we'd have been, some pushing 50, I think Adam's not quite there.
Not quite, no.
But for someone like that, in our teens, we would have remembered the Second World War. So I do wonder how much it's actually struck home with people. Because anyone watching this thinking that could have been really a Hitler-type character who could only see his own people, and that's all he was ever interested in, that's all he ever wanted. So I think that's a good historical allegory there. Now, the story itself, I think, actually really splits into two parts. You've got the first bit where the Doctor is trying to stop the rocket being launched, obviously with Sarah and Ian helping... Sarah and Harry, helping out, and Severin the Muso doing that as well. And then, obviously, when that failed, you've got the second part of the story, which is the rebellion against Davros. Now, Nida, I think, is one of the most fascinating characters there. You do wonder, does he actually worry about what's going to happen to him? I know he pretends to go over to the other side, but he doesn't. But, he must realise that megalomaniacs like Davros, they don't give a damn about him, you know. If Nida had to be sacrificed, he would be sacrificed. So I just wonder, would he have cut, under different circumstances, would he have cut and run? You know, either thrown his lot in with the rebels, or would you try to get out of it? Again, you look at the comparison, perhaps with Rudolf Hess, who came across. Obviously, you know what happened to him. I think was appalling. I don't want to go the history here, but he was someone who actually was trying to end the war. And also, you've got there's also General Rommel as well. For those of you who remember, who have heard the history, he again was one of Hitler's generals, but who was actually did try and put pay to the war and was basically told, well, you go and top yourself and you'll save your family and spare your family. So there's a lot of history there, and the way Terry Nation worked all that out, I think it would have struck a chord. Whether it does now, because obviously warfare has moved on and, you know, we're lucky enough, the only real conflicts, I suppose, that we can remember is the Falklands and also what's going on in Afghanistan, Iraq, around there. But we've seen nothing on the scale of the two great wars that we saw in the 20th century, and heaven forbid we should ever see those again. Now, the story itself, this was, I think, Tom Baker at his finest, because he hadn't turned into the I am the Doctor, Tom Baker being the Doctor. He still was playing it as the Time Lord, so to speak. I think people understand what I mean. It's also very sad seeing, thinking that there's two companions are both gone now. I mean, Ian Martyr obviously gone many, many years ago. And the delightful Liz Sladen, just a couple of years ago, that passed away. It's really just bring it home, though, how good an actor they were, how well they worked together. Some of the acting, though, wasn't brilliant. I mean, some of the guards, they sort of get a slight tap in the stomach and they go down like a sack of spuds. So I think they're not exactly the toughest character you've got out there. But overall, to say this has got to be regarded as one of the classic stories, because it really did give you the history of the Daleks, and it's interesting, of course, it's so late in the day, you know, it's 12 years after they first came about, you actually do understand what they're for, what the purpose is. But also, it sets up the future as being that, not irresistible, because they do lose, obviously, but how they you can see that they are going to be a dominant force in the galaxy, and if you have something similar, you know, you can see that happening, I think. That makes sense? It does to me, but hey. So all in all, yes. I mean, it really is a very, very enjoyable story to watch. The quality, the production values are good. Some special effects are a bit dodgy, but then we are talking 1975, so I don't think you can really worry too much about that. Also, apparently, I've got a feeling this is the first Doctor Who story ever shown in France. Might be right about that. So anyway, yeah, I've really enjoyed been watching it this week, doing various things, doing ironing and stuff like that, having breakfast sometimes. So, yeah, well, thank you, Adam, and be seeing you.
Get on with it!
Get on with it!
Yes, get on with it!
Two of us have to leave, and...
All right!
One of us would like to go to bed.
All right!
Two of us would like to go to bed.
Okay, right. So, the next bit of feedback is from Jeff Waddle. He says, a lot of people cite this as their favourite. It's really good. I'd easily have it in my top 10, but it's a bit long. Dave Ross
top 10 buts.
Has never been better.
So she said.
And don't start me on the hairy clam. Hairy clam? That was an in-joke. Yeah. All these years, nobody thought of going through the caves and invading the other dome? Question mark. Minor flaws aside, the three regulars are at their best here, and if they had chopped this down to 4 episodes, or even 5, this may well have been my favourite ever, but I'd still happily watch this over any new Who. Great stuff.
Hello, 20 Megabyte Podcast, this is Ian Kirk. Adam has released an extra episode, episode 207, with Paul Wilson. To answer a point raised in that episode, Siobhan Galichon is now doing a video cast with some Muppet. Crowdfunding provided a Muppet to co-host the show. It's true. I couldn't make that up. Take note, Adam, in case Isabella does not work out. Genesis of the Daleks by Terry Nation. The ventilation ducts again. The Doctor is locked in Davros's office. He has a Dalek gun. He tries to open the door with his sonic screwdriver. I remember the scene with the Doctor agonising about the two wires. It was not as significant as I remembered. The Dalek rolls over the wires later and sets off the explosion. It did not change the future. Terry Nation had the copyright to the Daleks and would have been out of pocket if the Doctor had removed them from history. A Dalek is a piece of camera. People complained when Hartnell did that. They did not take it up with the Dalek, though. Yeah, not many characters make it out of this story alive. Davros is killed by one of his own Daleks.
I'm not dead!
On one of the DVD extras, Tom Baker tells a story about two children visiting the set. He had a word with Michael Wisher, playing Davros, beforehand. Wisher sat silent and unmoving, as Tom told them what a great character he was. When the boy complained that he did not do anything, Tom told him to move a switch on the control panel. As the boy reached out, Davros grabbed his hand and shouted, and the two kids ran away.
You have to.
Yes.
The TARDIS crew were put on Skaro by the Time Lords, but they did not have anyone else's permission to be there. The Carmeds arrest them for being fouls, the fouls arrest them for being Carmeds, and the mutants attack them for being normal.
Genesis.
I thought I was going to say it's not easy being green.
Thank you. That was Ian Kirk.
Yes, thanks, Captain.
Yes, indeed. Thank you, Ian. This is from Alan T. Butcher. Adam, it's really good, isn't it?
Adam.
It really is a perfect pitch story, perfectly pitched story for what they could achieve on screen while still being an ambitious... That was Ben. Still being an ambitious, well-thought-out original story for the Mark III travel machines. Sorry, I'm trying to concentrate. I've got kids in the other room arguing and text messages arriving, so I do apologise. Some have suggested it is too long, but this seems like a shabby charge levelled automatically at most six-part stories. I have to admit that they could have successfully cut it down because they did... repeat and for the audio. Who's that coughing?
Breathe, Robert. Breathe.
I'm breathing.
You, something go down the wrong way?
No, just a...
Anyway, moving on. I'm not dead yet. I grew up with that LP release. In fact, I clearly remember being shocked to discover it was a six-part story when I eventually saw it in full. However, I think that this gives you time to luxuriate in watching the brilliant world that they created through near perfect acting, brilliant sounds and appropriately designed sets, etc. Michael Wisher should surely have earned a BAFTA for his performance, and if this had been a single play rather than a serial within Doctor Who, as it's good enough to be, then he may have won such an award. The other thing to mention is the continuation of the story backwards in time to the childhood of Davros by Big Finish in the I Davros series, which I have mentioned in previous episodes of this podcast. Brilliant. This is one of the many best things they have done and is very much Genesis of the Davros. Also, they went out of their war to tie it right into the... I think that should say out of their way to tie it into the TV story as by the end characters and soundscapes coverage with it. Those are my thoughts, Alan D. Budjar. That concludes feedback.
Thanks, Alan.
Let's see what Ben
says.
Thank
you.
He says, no, had flu for 3 days, just woken up. Next week, hopefully. So
Excuses.
Yes, thank you, everybody, sending in feedback to the show. And sorry about my useless reading out. I should have given it to Mary. That now leads on to this week's edition of You Won't Get This One.
And I won't.
Matthew will.
Right, so we're all predicting Matthew to win this. Matthew, the pressure's on.
Yes, we are all predicting that, yes.
All right, place your bets now. Matthew will win.
Well, right now I'm just thankful for small mercies that Ben won't be showing up.
That's not very nice. I'm sorry, Ben.
Ben would win.
Because he's Ben, and Adam likes Ben.
I was about to say.
We all love Ben. Anyway, right.
Do we?
Yes,
we do. Speak to yourself.
Yes, darling.
Daddy!
She's always saying swear words, darling. Don't worry about it. I'll turn a contract off later.
Don't forget to put the dog's dinner on.
Yeah, I've got to do that at 12. Good point. Sorry, Isabel, I'm nearly done. Do you want to do the questions?
Does it fit you?
Okay. Do you want to read the questions out? All right, okay. Let's just
get excellent!
Hang on. Will you hurry up, Isabella? Because never mind the post, put it down there. I haven't got time for this. Right, yeah, I'll stick that on your head.
On your head.
I don't know if it's going to work or not, but we're going to give it a go. I've got so many things to try and juggle around. Right, you've got to hold that.
Juggle, we're recording, Adam.
Right. Hold that. The microphone.
Yeah, juggling doesn't come across well in an audio podcast.
Okay, the first question then. The first question then goes to... Hang on. Balance this on me. Matthew? Speak into the microphone.
Matthew?
What were the first spoken words of the story?
Don't read the answer.
Ah, the story.
Ah, there you are.
The answer too.
No. Anybody?
No? Ah, welcome, Doctor.
Okay, that's Kirby with a point. I think we gave Robert 2 points earlier on, didn't we?
Yes.
Yep.
Yes.
What's the matter, Isabella? Right, the next question goes to Mary.
Alright.
What contrary?
The dead soldier found by the doctor, Sarah and Harry, have on his jacket?
I didn't hear that whole question.
What did the dead soldier found by the doctor, Sarah and Harry, have on his jacket?
Don't remember.
I said I know first.
I am a dead god.
It's a radiation detecting badge.
Correct.
Yes. All right.
One, two, testing. Hang on, your microphone's not working, Isabella. Uh-huh. One, two. Why is it not working?
And he didn't have a red shirt on? Huh.
Can I have them? These
no.
Are
well, you can't stick them in your ears. That's why I've used that. Hang on.
These are
slipping. Microphones
stick
are
it in your ears.
It's cost me a fortune, this microphone.
Wow, they fell off. I told you, they keep falling off.
Hang on. One, two. Why is it not working? One, two.
That's because Adam's got a big head.
It's because you're plugging it into a Macintosh.
I'll be quiet.
Macintosh rocks.
Yes, they are rocks.
It's a fortune, this microphone. And it's not working. I'm not happy.
Whoever made the microphone made Amazon. It rock.
Right, Isabella.
Apple microphone.
Yeah, I can't.
Well, it...
No, Apple don't make only inbuilt microphones. Right. Anyway.
Right,
they didn't make the microphone that was built
okay,
into
right,
it.
We're
they
have to...
just bought it from someone else.
Right, okay. So, right, where are we?
We are up to...
I'm in Australia, Western Australia.
Right, whose question is? Who had the last question?
Question Mary had the last question.
Right, so the next question, therefore, goes to Robert.
Right, give me.
Ooh.
Okay, so... What Christmas song does Sarah mention as they make their way through the minefield or something?
Yes, go on in, Robert. It's your turn.
I know. I don't really know. I'll take Kirby. A guess, can I?
Yes.
We three kings of our own.
No,
oh,
Kirby.
Know.
No. Good King Wenceslas.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Right. Kirby, your question.
Right. Master?
Right, okay. What section were the Doctor and Harry first captured in?
I have the foggiest.
Oh,
I
Mary know. Knows.
Section 101.
Correct.
Reese. Oh,
yes.
Okay.
This one. Okay. One.
What does General Raven say is going to happen to the Doctor and Harry after they are interrogated.
I know.
They'll be taken out and hanged rather than shot to save ammunition.
That is correct. Right. Matthew.
Yes.
Your question.
Okie dokie. Which one are we on again?
That one, the top one, number six.
Right. What will the killed?
No, the top one, it says there, look.
Can you say it? Because I can't read it.
We're not look at the Ballad. Top one. The top one. Not that Khaled. One. Number six.
Khaled.
Oh, what are the first two objects the Doctor takes out of his pockets after being ordered by General Raven?
One point for each object.
Sonic screwdriver.
Correct. And one
go
more.
For the obvious.
Magnifying glass.
That is correct. There we go. Correct. Right, Mary.
Yes.
Apparently don't forget the etheric beam locator.
Apparently I've got to read this question.
You said that.
Yeah.
What will the Khaled battle cry be according to General Raven?
Yay! Woohoo!
Run away!
Whose question is this?
Total extermination of the I can't remember the last bit of it. Total extermination.
I'm going to give you that one.
Of the thalls.
No, that's the one.
Okay.
Correct.
Right. Robert.
Okay. By Bunny Tyler.
Robert, your question.
Yes, sir.
Nida exclaimed an object belonging to the Doctor and asked him what it was.
It says Nida examined, Isabella. Nida examined.
What was it?
I know.
Was that the etheric beam locator?
It was.
Yeah.
That was correct.
Don't shout too loud. Right,
that was correct.
We like that enthusiasm when we're right.
Kirby.
Yeah.
Master.
Kirby.
Master.
What is the
Davros.
Davros, first words.
Did you get that?
I don't know.
Come on.
What is the Davros first words?
I don't know.
Does anybody?
No.
The answer then...
Perfect. Does anybody?
It's his first word.
You won't get this one. The first words were, observe the test closely, my friend. Reese's question.
What is missing at the beginning at...
I know.
...of the episode two?
The recap of episode
Correct.
One?
Correct.
So the scores currently after those rounds of questionings. Can I have the microphone, please? Thank you.
Matthew 2, Mary 3, Robert 4, Kirby 3, Reese 4.
So essentially Robert and Reese joint leaders. So the next question goes to Matthew.
Ooh.
Can you read it?
I've got to read this one. Who helps Davros with the first Dalek tests?
Would that be Garmin?
Yes, it would
Correct.
Be.
Correct.
Yes.
Mary.
Garmin.
You read it.
I've got to read this one. It's after the time ring is confiscated, who are Harry and the Doctor handed into the care of?
I don't know.
What's the answer?
Whose question was that? Mary's?
Mine.
Yeah. You don't know, Mary. Go on then, Matthew.
Ronson.
Correct.
Correct.
Yep.
Right, Robert.
Yes, sir.
Do you want to do this one?
Okay.
Come on, Isabella.
Right. According to the Ronson Scarrow.
No, shall I do it then? According to Ronson, Scarrow is the only planet in how many galaxies capable of supporting intelligent life?
I know.
Oh, great. Seven galaxies?
Correct.
Correct.
Right. Kirby.
Master.
Okay, what was the Davros Dalek project now known
What was Davros's Dalek project known as? Be quiet.
Family's name.
What was Davros's Dalek project known as prior to getting its more familiar name?
The Mark III, because they're Mark III travel machines.
Correct.
Yeah.
Right. Reese.
Yes.
What colour was the switch Davros used to operate the Daleks?
I take a guess if Reese doesn't get it.
Was it no red?
No.
Can I say?
Go on in, Robert.
Okay.
It's orange.
Correct.
Orange, isn't it?
Yeah.
Right. Matthew.
Orange.
Yes.
Right. What was the first word ever uttered by a Dalek?
Alien, correct. I must
That'll
exterminate.
Do. That'll do. Only one word needed. Right, Mary.
Yeah. Oh, so it wasn't.
Daddy.
Are you my mommy?
Mary. Mary.
What was the name of the explosive that was being packed into the head of the rocket?
I don't know.
Reese knows.
Dystonic?
Correct.
Near enough. It's dystronic, but that's near enough.
Dystronic.
Yes.
Yeah.
Robert.
Yes, sir.
What colour boots does Sarah wear?
Boots?
Yes, boots.
I know.
What?
They're not blue, are they?
No. Go on, Mary.
No. And they're like purple.
No.
Yeah, that'll do. Okay.
They're reddish
purple.
Purple.
Exactly, yeah. Reddish purple. That's what I had down. Well done.
Definitely.
Kirby.
Master.
What improvements does Davros want made to the Daleks?
I don't know.
Anybody?
It's a bit
vague.
Come on, everyone.
Oh, never mind. You know the answer. The answer is optical systems and sensory circuits. Reese.
Good try, everyone.
Oh, everyone knew that.
Really. It's like, why didn't I think of that?
Reese.
Okay.
Yes.
What substance does Davros use to strengthen 10 called
Khalid
Dome.
To strengthen the Khalid Dome, that's what it says. What substance does Davros use to strengthen the Khalid Dome?
I can't remember. Pass it on to someone who might.
Anybody?
I'll take a guess.
Anyone? Go on then, Robert.
It's not Dalekanium, is it?
No, it isn't. It's 30-foot thick reinforced concrete. And after that round of questionings, the scores are as follows.
Right. Matthew 7, Mary 5.
No.
4, I mean. Yes. Sorry. Robert 7, Kirby 5, Reese 5.
Right, so next question goes to Matthew. And that is this.
Okay. Who reported the governing body's
decision?
I don't know.
Oh, I'll start again then. Who reported the governing body's decision to suspend Davros's work to Davros?
Would that be Mulgrin?
It would be.
However you pronounce that.
You pronounced it correctly enough. Correct. Right, Mary.
Bob.
Yes.
While trying to rescue Sarah, the doctor introduces himself to a couple of guards. What does he say?
I know.
Yes, that's a great line. Excuse me, could you help me? I'm a spy.
Correct.
Right. Robert, your question.
Yes, sir.
Right. What is the name of Sarah's Muto friend?
That's Severin.
Is correct.
Severin what?
Kirby.
Mistress?
Mistress?
What does the doctor exclaim just after the rocket is launched?
I don't remember.
Oh, bugger.
No, it's definitely not that. Anybody?
I sent Sarah and Harry in there.
That'll do.
Hera.
That was correct.
Near enough. Right. Was that Robert's question? I've lost track now. Was that Kirby's question?
That was
Kirby. Okay, it's Reese's question now then.
Okay. You would interrogate me?
Right, go on, Isabella, read out Reese's question. Right.
Why was the doctor free to leave the called
Khalid
Dome?
I know.
They wanted to show that whilst they were ruthless in war or in battle, they were generous in peace or something like that.
Not quite what I've got written down here, but it's a good answer, so I'll give you a point.
They wanted to spare him as a good example.
No. Anybody like to
wait,
come
wait, wait, wait. Did you say Khalid Dome? Because it's a Thal Dome.
Yeah, all right. Well, never mind. Thal Dome. Does that make a difference to you? Reese, do you get...
What was the answer?
Does anybody know the answer?
General Amnesty.
That'll do. Robert gets the point. Right then. So after that round of questions...
But it is a Thal Dome.
It's a Thal Dome. Okay, thank you. You don't really get a point for that. But anyway, what do I get up to? Right, so the scores then. Everybody. In last place with 6 points, that's Mary and Reese. In second place with 6 points is Mary. But joint in the lead is Matthew and Robert with 10. Yeah. And amazingly, Robert hasn't had any points deducted so far, so it's quite amazing. Right, Matthew, your question.
You sure?
Yes.
Right. What is the name of the girl that the doctor befriended in
the
Thal Dome?
Betan?
Correct. Mary.
Yes.
Where, according to Nida, is the only place that Davros never goes?
To the toilet.
I know.
I don't know.
I knew.
Go on, Matthew.
The lower level.
Correct.
Robert.
To the toilet, then.
Robert, your question.
What is the cliffhanger from episode 4 to 5? Davros screams.
That's the answer, you silly girl!
Sorry.
No, what was that?
Ooh.
Forget that one. Right, this is your question.
What is the cliffhanger to...
That is the answer. Yep. She just said the question and the answer. Never mind. Sorry. Right, try
did
this
she,
one without reading the answer this time.
Did she, though?
What? They said, so what's the cliffhanger?
Did she, though?
What's the cliffhanger to from episode 4 to 5?
I didn't know. I would have thought, is that the Dalek creature around the Doctor's neck?
No, does anybody know the answer then?
It's Davros shouting. Yeah, Davros is shouting, "You will tell me."
All right, fair enough. That'll do for a point. Right. Kirby, try and read it out right this time.
Pasta?
Without reading the answer, please, Isabella.
Pasta. Which of the Daleks defeats did the Doctor first tell Davros off?
I didn't hear the beginning part of the question.
Which of the Daleks defeats did the Doctor first tell Davros off?
Of.
It was the Dalek invasion of Earth. They got the year wrong.
They did.
Yeah.
Again, another inconsistency. Yes.
Well, that was because
classic Who and their inconsistencies.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, also it not only mixes up the year, but actually does uses the ending from the movie version of that story, not the TV version.
Okay, right then. Reese.
I just watched the movie last week.
Reese, this is your question.
Yeah.
What colour is Davros' life control button?
I know.
Okay, I'm going to get this wrong again, aren't I? Blue?
No. Robert?
It's black.
Correct.
Oh, the scores after that round, and not many questions left, are in last place. In joint last place, in fact.
Mary and Reese.
With... 6 points.
Yeah,
yes. In sort of third place is
Kirby
with
7.
In second place is
Robert
with 11. And in the lead is
Matthew
with
told ya
14.
This correct.
Was
right. Matthew. This is right, Matthew. This is your question.
Okay.
What are the two things the Doctor, Sarah, and Harry must recover?
The time ring and the tape with all the where the Doctor mentions all the Daleks' defeats.
Yes, correct. Singular tape. Yeah. Singular.
And good job for remembering it was one.
Right. Sorry, Kirby. Sorry, Kirby.
Mary.
Yes.
Where did Nanida have a dozen cracks? Men waiting.
I'll say that a bit more in English. Where did Nida have a dozen crack men waiting? Section something.
Don't know.
Okay, anybody? Oh, Kirby does.
Nine. Section nine.
Correct. Yes.
Yeah. Right. Nine.
Robert.
Nine.
Robert.
Number nine.
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 How many? Nine. How many scientists went over to Davros' side?
That's Robert's question, if you listen.
Three?
Pardon?
Is it three?
No, anybody?
Three? Two?
Correct.
That's correct for Reese. Right.
I should have said two.
You should have done. Kirby.
Yes, you should.
Kirby, your question.
Right.
Master.
Which one was it?
That one, number 34.
Okay. Who was the first of the Doctor's group of friends to reach safely from the bunker explosion?
I'm going to say Harry. I don't know.
No. Anybody?
Sarah.
No, the answer was Severin.
Oh, that's going
to be...
Reese.
Severin Snape? How did he get into this?
Be quiet. Reese, this is your question.
Yes.
How long does the Doctor think he has delayed development of the Daleks?
I know.
Go on. I know.
Reese, this is your question.
I know.
Kirby knows. Give it to him.
We all know.
Go on, Kirby.
1,000 years.
Correct.
Yeah.
And,
No, we don't all know, Mary. I clearly don't know.
clearly you don't, yes. But everybody
else. There's a couple of free-for-all. Stop talking. There's a couple of free-for-all questions now for the first person who comes in with the correct answer. The first one is this.
We only have 5 minutes.
If you interrupt, they stop interrupting me. They'll be a bit of the 5 minutes in, won't they, Isabella?
True.
Yes. Right then, this is a free-for-all question.
Come on. What are the last two words of the story?
That's the answer. Right, one blimmin' question.
Ooh.
Try not to do the answer then. Right.
We didn't hear the answer. Sorry.
Yeah, we didn't hear the answer.
Ooh. No, we didn't.
Right.
All I heard was her finishing it and
doing the answer
yelling
this time. Right.
What are the last two words of the story?
Did you hear that?
I know.
Go on then, Mary.
Something good.
Correct. And the last question. Try not to do the answer this time, Isabella. The last question is...
Who directed Genius?
Genesis.
I know.
Genesis of the Daleks.
Robert said he knows.
Dave Maloney.
Correct. Mm. So the final scores then are in last place.
Reese.
With.
Yeah.
7.
Right. In second to last place.
Is Mary.
With.
8.
Yes. In third place is.
Kirby.
With. 9. Yes. And
that's me, just
in second place.
Robert.
With.
13.
And the winner this week, for a change, it's.
Matthew.
With.
16.
For a change. For a change.
Exterminate. Exterminate.
For a change.
Thank you. Thank you, what's her name again? Isabella, for the most stressful edition
what's
of.
You
won't get this one ever. Quite easily, I just did. Right then, so what are we doing next week?
Shada.
Shada next week. Shada.
When are we recording?
The Shada. Oh, right.
When are we recording?
I don't know. When are we recording, Kirby?
I can't do it on Sunday.
No, we're talking about recording the podcast. Podcast.
Kirby, you're a complete turncoat.
I know.
It really is.
Sunday is, unless we were to do it later than 3 o'clock, I could do it at 4. I can't do it at 3.
That's what she said.
Okay. Well,
if I wanted to do it an hour later, I could do it on Sunday.
Well,
I can't do it.
I tell you what, I can't do it this Sunday because I've got a bridal show, I think, unless it's
okay,
the evening.
Okay, so there.
Hang on.
Monday.
Unless it's the evening. What time could I do it? The earliest I could do it would be 7 in the evening. What are you saying? What time is that where you are?
He has to do it later.
Oh,
so right. That would make
it
9 your
time. I don't think Deb will go for that one, I'm afraid.
So Monday.
That looks like Monday. I do apologize, everyone. Go on then.
Can I make a
Yes.
Yes.
Well, I was just going to make a suggestion. Since we're doing Shada, there's 5 versions of Shada, and we're all going to be reviewing them.
Yeah.
Or at least discussing them.
I would imagine the
point.
TV version that should have been would probably be the one we're going to do.
The one with the Tom Baker narration?
Yes.
Possibly. Oh, yeah, I know what you're talking about. The other one, the Tom Baker narration. Yes, that one would probably be the best one because that's the one that I've seen. I have heard the Big Finish one with Paul McGann, but really it was meant to be with Tom Baker, was it not?
Yeah, but Tom Baker couldn't be bothered to come work with Big Finish when they were recording
no
it.
No need for that.
And the one that we are going to be watching is going to be the Ian Levine.
Oh, well, we won't be. We will be watching the.
Yeah, I'm going to watch the one the that I've got, Wii. Which is the one that I had on video, you, yeah. Which is now on DVD.
Well, I was going to suggest.
Did it come out on DVD? Have they released that on DVD, by the way?
Yeah, the Shada was released on DVD a year ago.
Oh, should we do that one then? So I haven't watched it yet. Should we watch that
one? No. Not the Ian Levine one.
Not the Ian Levine one.
The Ian Levine one's not available. The Ian Levine one has leaked online, and I sent a link to everybody
four
or 5 months ago when it popped up online. My suggestion was going to be, since we're going to be in a limited 2-hour time frame to talk about things, and there's 5 versions of Shada to touch upon, and the possibility that not everybody's going to be watching the same version, and I say this is the person who usually wins, could we just skip the quiz next week?
I don't know.
I might not be there, but I agree with this. Let us skip the quiz.
No.
Yes, let's skip the quiz.
No. Quiz.
Yes.
Quiz.
No quiz.
No.
Nine.
No.
I don't know. I'm not sure about that because obviously the quiz is part of the show. But
quiz is part of the show.
Well, I will be watching the Tom Baker one.
I'm going to watch the DVD one because I haven't seen it yet. I bought it and haven't watched it. So
I've got that one. I've got every version.
Okay.
Okay, and on that, I have to say goodbye.
I've got to go and cook the dog's dinner, have a wee, have some lunch, give some Isabella some lunch, try and tackle a very annoying teenager. So until next week, hope the new listeners have stayed with us. Please try and stay with us, because we like listeners, don't we? Until next time.
Yes, we do. I think the quiz puts some off.
Do they? Do they really? It puts the listeners off.
I will confess, Adam, that looking on the U.S. iTunes, we've had very recently some very mixed reviews.
I haven't seen any reviews on iTunes, to be honest with you. Go on.
There are some, I think, on the UK iTunes, but I know they're on the US iTunes. But the things I've seen talked about is the length of the episode that people think were too long. And I have had a friend of mine who was listening to us who said that they thought we could take 20 or 30 minutes out of the show if we didn't do the quiz every single week. Not that I'm saying we should do that, but I'm just pointing this out.
Hmm. Well, if anybody likes the quiz, it'd be nice if people actually could sort of write in and mention so. If they don't, then the quiz will go. Simple as that.
Hmm.
So vote for the quiz in some ways. If you like it, it stays. If you don't, it goes. But until next week, thank you for listening to the podcast.
It's okay, don't vote. It's all right.
Until next week. Bye.
Goodbye.
Bye. So long and thanks for all the fish.
Megabyte Doctor Who podcast is an APV Services production and is a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is the trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended.